I came to Israel in 1982 with my husband, who was born here but raised in Canada. He's from Canada. I'm from California. We met in Florida. We got married. We came here. Makes sense. But we weren't believers. Had no idea what that meant. I do have a Baptist Christian background when I was little. Somewhere along the line, my family moved to the mountains, and we didn't have a church, so the Bibles went away, and that was nice. Now I lay me down to sleep. That was it for the prayers for many years. And forgot about it. Forgot about God, forgot about Jesus, forgot about the Bible. But God has not forgotten me. He didn't forget me. When I was here in the land in Tiberias for 6 years, I was pregnant with baby number 3. Maybe some of you know some of my babies. Zev Sigulim, Randy Sigulim, Moshe Sigulim. They've been around. Most people know me by, oh, you're Zev's mom or Randy's mom. Oh, yes, I know you, sort of. We're known for our children. The fruit. Fortunately, it's good fruit. When I was 5 months pregnant with my third baby, Moshe, my husband died in a car accident in Tiberias. And as God would have it, and he does have his way, he accepted the Lord 3 months before he died through Ken Kroll and Danny Ahab and others from the Tiberias group. And a few months later, after my baby was born, I accepted the Lord into my life through Terry Morey, and that's history. In 1989, I did come to this church. It wasn't this building, though. You guys were in the process of building this building, apparently. And so I do remember coming here at least once. The Lord takes us on some routes that are like really like through the desert. And he did that with me too. I was in Tiberias for a few years and going to the congregation there. And then the Lord said, okay, it's time to go home back to California for a while. I thought I'd go for a year or two, and it ended up being 5. And when it was time to come back, it was like, okay, God is doing this. When I got there, when I landed, I kept telling people, I'm just staying for a little while. I'm going back. You know, don't get too attached. But when I finally went to my mother and my family and others and said, okay, it's time for me to go back. And it's like, well, finally. You've been talking about it for 5 years now. So the Lord brought me back. But he didn't take me back to Tiberias. He took me to the desert. And I reminded him that I really don't like brown. Green is my favorite color. And that he ought to take that into consideration. And I'd been to Beersheba once in 1982. And it was brown. And I was not impressed with the idea of moving south. But through those few years where I'd gotten to know the Lord, I did learn one thing. If I was in his will, wherever I went, I would be blessed. And I knew that if I would be blessed, my children would be blessed. So I said, okay, I'll go to the desert. So I did. I went to Beersheba area. And then from there, he took me to Arad, which was even further into the desert. He couldn't have taken me to Arad before that because I had no idea it existed. And actually, it's a nice little place. It is about 1,800 feet above sea level, or 600 meters above sea level. And if you go over to the edge and look over, you can see the Dead Sea, which is 500 meters below sea level. And there's one road that goes down. And on Yom Kippur, if you take it on a skateboard, it could be really fun. I haven't done it, and I don't intend to, but it's a thought. In the years that he took me to the desert, when he first took me down there, and I first came back to the land, and I knew he was taking me down there, and I didn't understand why. And I prayed and I prayed and I prayed, and I said, "You have to show me why you brought me here." And I fasted and I prayed and I did all those things that we're supposed to do in order for him to talk to me very clearly and make it very clear. And he didn't for a long time, until I gave up and I said, "Well, okay, I don't know. I'm just, maybe you just want me here. You want me here just to raise my three sons? Fine. That's what I'm here for." It was right after that, a few days after I let it go, that he gave me a vision. And that would have been 13 years ago now. And he gave me a vision. By profession, I'm a registered nurse and a counselor for women. And I worked with Bad Haim when I first got back, and I worked with Crisis Pregnancy Center back in California. And so I've been working with women for a long time. But he gave me this vision, and it was one that I saw as I was driving. Good thing we trust God. But I saw this big house, and I saw in like three layers. And on the front porch was all these women, all different kinds of women. There were Bedouin women and Arab women and pregnant women and a woman sitting there with her legs crossed smoking a cigarette and just many women. And I said, "Oh, wow, okay, what do you want me to do with this?" And he says, "I want you to take care of them. And I want you to teach them to be good mothers." And I thought, "Wow, I'm a good mother. I can teach them that." And so, of course, you know, I thought that meant like, you know, now, then, back then. And so I said, okay, we're gonna build this house. We're gonna make this house. The Lord's gonna bring the money. He's gonna do this. He's gonna do that. It's all gonna fall together, and we're just gonna have a wonderful house for women." And then time went on, and that didn't happen. Although I was taking care of one woman here and one woman there, coming to my house, they were around. A lot of women need help. Anyway, a lot of women need help. And as I progressed, the women sort of got younger and younger, and then suddenly she was 17, and then another one was only 15, and I had gotten into foster care. You know, below the age of 18, they're foster kids or underage, and belong to the welfare system. I tried to stay away from the welfare system, thinking, "Oh, they're not going to accept me because I'm a believer, and I believe in the New Testament, and I believe in Jesus." And I already knew way back then that that was not a popular thing. And so I avoided the social services. God has His way anyway, and He said, "Okay, well, there's this 17-year-old, and she needs a place." I thought, Okay. So she was my first foster child. That was 10 years ago. And then there was another foster child and a few more. And one day I had 5 foster children in my house, which is really unusual for a single mom. And my own 3 boys were in and around and about in Panimiot Mechmoret, the Navy school in Tanya. And my third one was in the school, Techni school for Hailavir, for Air Force High School, which he finally finished 9 years later, last week, as a student through 4 years of high school, and then another 2 years of engineering college, and then his 3 years of actual Army duty, which he was a teacher at the same school that he went to school at. So anyway, he's finally finished, and we're all very happy, and he's thrilled, and he can finally change his uniform to something else. So Over the last 10 years, I've had about 10 foster kids in my house for different lengths of time. I've had three foster kids now for 8 years, and two of them are still in my house. One of my foster daughters, we felt we did really well with her, so we let her marry my son, Zev, up in Tiberias. And Zev, if you've ever heard of the Galilee Experience up in Tiberias, Terry and Eric Morey started it and ran it for many years. And they were so happy when their pseudo-grandson, my son Zev, became the manager of the place. So he's now the manager, married to my foster daughter, who now has given me baby number three. So now I'm a grandmother. I have history here. Which is nice. But anyway, 12 years ago, the Lord gave me this vision. And I said, okay, Lord, you guide me and we'll do it together. And I guess he figured I wasn't quite ready, so he made me wait 12 years. And along about the year number 11, I met up with these people from Teen Challenge, Richard, and Peter from Czech Republic, and another brother, Pastor Jimmy. And they all came to my house, which is not an easy thing for people to show up to my house in the desert, but they did. And we started talking about putting together a shelter for women. Not a shelter, a home, a center. And that's what we did. It took us a few years to get things organized and done. It took us another year or so to find the right place. Finally, the Lord said, oh, how about this place right across the street that just came up for rent yesterday? I thought, whew, that's good. That was good. That was right next to my house. Now the Orthodox don't have to go very far to find all of us. I am a dangerous missionary, by the way. I just want you all to know that. Kind of proud of that, I think. Last year, about this time, we took this place across the street from where I was living. I just moved recently. And we cleaned it up and fixed it up and painted it up and found the right people to come and join in with us and move in. And we officially opened up in September of last year, our first Teen Challenge Women's Center in Israel, which is a very unusual thing. That the fact is that the first Teen Challenge in Israel that's officially Teen Challenge is a woman's center. I'm kind of happy about that one myself, because almost every country in every place, it's always two or three or four men's centers before the woman's center gets to go. And so we kind of like to do things differently here, and that's what we did. We started our woman's center first, and the Lord has blessed it. He has blessed us a lot. And we've kind of felt like we've had kind of a slow go of it, because we opened our doors and they didn't flock in. I don't understand. I thought sure the place would be full within the first month or three. And it took 2 months just to get our first woman in. And we went and took her from the hospital because she couldn't get out of bed. So we drug her in and fixed her up and got her all cleaned up. And she was with us for a few months, four or five months. And then she decided that it was time to go. She went back to the streets of Tel Aviv. She went back to her habits and her prostitution. And a few weeks ago, she died in the streets. But we had her in our place for 4.5 months. We know she accepted Jesus. We know that she is saved. We know it was heartfelt, that it was real. But the addiction problem is very strong. And Satan is very active. But we'd like to believe, we want to believe, we are sure she's with him and that all her pain is over, because she had a horrendous story. horrendous story. But God is good, and he takes the brokenhearted, and he mends them up. And sometimes they try to run away, but he knows where they are. And he doesn't forget us. Even if we prayed prayers many, 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 many years ago when I was little, completely forgot about him, he brings us back in. And he takes care of our salvation. All we can do is do our part. And if we can open a house, take in a foster kid, say the right words at the right time to somebody who you never knew or saw before in your life, we just have to do our part and step up to the plate and say, okay, Lord, I don't know why you chose me exactly, but you did. And I want to do the best I can, and I'm going to try. And I'm not an administrative person, and my bookkeeper people can tell me that. As a matter of fact, they say I'm a bit of a nightmare. But it's okay. I'm trying to learn how to deal with petty cash. That's all they give me. But God is good. He's got a plan. It's his plan. It is not our plan. And he will further his plan. But he wants to use all of us. And even those of us who really don't know quite what we're doing, he's willing to teach us if we're willing to learn. But it does kind of require stepping out. And even if it means going to the desert, to the dust and the dirt and the sharabs and all of those things, and having a fan club that dresses in black. And that's only been going on for 9 years now. It's been a little bit less this year. I think it's because it's hot. But I don't know. I'm hoping the Lord will turn over a new leaf for us. I recently had to move out of the house that I was in. I was in that house for 12 years. And I kind of want to look at it like a new leaf, you know. Okay, all this stuff was taking place in that house, and I'm moving on to another house, and maybe they won't find me. I have two to the right of me and two to the left of me on the new street. And we've seen them walking by and looking, trying to look into the windows, and so they know who I am. But you see, we just try. Eventually, we'll get it right. The Lord is good. We haven't had any. Our program that we set up is a teen challenge program along the lines of their rules and things, and we aim for a 1-year program. And in our program, we have discipleship training, we have prayer times, and we have afternoon training for skills and other things. We don't exactly want the women to come in, get all spiritually hyped up, and then go back out to the same old stuff. We want to train them to do something new, something different. And that's real important. And so far we haven't had anyone for a full year, but we're looking forward to that. We're praying towards that. We've had several women who have come and stayed for a few days. Said that wasn't for them. Usually had to do with cigarette smoking and having to quit. And we've had a few women who have come for a few weeks, and that had more to do with rebellious hearts and not wanting to come under the rules. I think I was like that. And then we've had a few women who have come and came under the rules, and it looks really good, and then they get all cleaned up and fixed up, and then they get bored. and they've left. But and it, when that happens, it's discouraging. Just like, you know, when you get a prayer group going and you think, okay, we've got 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 people coming now, and then and you get up to 10 or 11 and then all of a sudden, I don't know, they all go away. You get discouraged. But the point is, you have to start it up again, have another prayer meeting, maybe in somebody else's house, change it a little, I don't know. You have to keep putting out for it, trying to get it right. And the problem is that what we're finding after we've been doing this for a year is that we've been trying to get it right. We've been trying to do it right. And we come up with this idea, and we come up with that idea. And we try those ideas, and sometimes it's good, and sometimes it isn't. Okay, throw that one out. That didn't work. But what we really, really, really need is prayer. We need prayer. Not for me, because Polly started this thing and Polly wants to succeed, blah, blah, blah. Because God started this thing and we want to get it right according to His will. And we need prayer because we're heading in the right direction, but we're not there yet. And you guys are here from the land. The women that are coming to us are from the land. And they speak a lot of different languages, Russian and Arabic, and we have a French lady now, one who speaks French, English, and Hebrew, even a little bit of Hebrew thrown in there. That's our biggest challenge, so is all the languages. One of the reasons that I wanted to come and speak, and I want to speak to the congregations of Israel, is so that you guys know that we are there, that we are open, that we are functioning, that we are trying the best we can, and that we are willing to take those women who you know need help, but you don't know where to send them. And it's not all about drug addicts or prostitutes. It's about women who have been abused and have to change their environment. It's about women who have fallen through the cracks and they just don't really fit anywhere else. But somewhere along the line, they've accepted Jesus. And it's like, well, if we take on this woman, we're not really sure how long she's going to be here because she has nowhere else to go. And this is a one-year program. Not that that's been a problem yet, but all these things, you know, we're taking into consideration all these things that are happening in our little place there, and we realize that there's a lot of people in Israel who don't yet know that we even exist, and there's a lot of women out there that still need help, and all the congregations have a part in this center. Because the women that we get are going to be coming from the congregations mostly. And we're not talking about big, strong, believers that have been believers for many, many, many years. And they don't necessarily need to be there. Maybe they do. I don't know. But women who come to the congregation once or twice and they're just not functioning well. And it's mostly because their world is turned upside down or something. These women we can take in and we can help if they're willing to come and if they're willing to be a part of the program. What we do need, because we live in Israel and because I'm a semi-famous person with the Orthodox, and they know what I'm doing, they're not impressed. These women do have to know what they're getting into. We can't just say, this woman came to me, she's not a believer, but, you know, she's open. That's not quite going to be what we need. Not what we need. It's not going to be enough. Because we cannot be accused of taking people off the street, taking them home with us, and trying to brainwash them. So, number one, anybody that comes in has to know
who Yeshua is.
They don't necessarily have to have accepted him, although that would be nice too. But they have to at least know what the New Testament is. They have to understand that we are a believer organization, and that they're going to learn in the discipleship training, they're going to learn Old Testament and New Testament. And the reason I say Old Testament is because there are some Arabic Christian congregations that don't necessarily teach Old Testament and are even opposed to it. So they need to know, yeah, we're learning Old Testament and we're learning New Testament. And they need to know that before they come in. And so we need your help in helping us filter some of the women. And that may sound kind of harsh, as in, well, won't you just take anybody? No. And it's not that we don't want to, and it's not that we couldn't. We just can't, because we're so new, we can't take the chance of being accused of trying to brainwash somebody or kidnapping them off the street. And we do lock the door at night, so we can't be accused of locking them in. Mind you, we're locking the doors because we live in the desert. And never mind. Anyway, we need help. We need your guys' help. We need your prayers. We need to know who it is we're getting before they come. We need to know that you guys know who they are before they come. And then once they get there, some of them have no family or no family that talks to them. Some of them have no friends. I mean, literally no friends. And they get there and then they're already leaving the centers, the big cities, and going down to the desert. And I can relate to that one. I wasn't so impressed with that myself. But when they get there and it's like, oh, where are we? We're in the middle of nowhere. And then they have to get their cell phone taken away from them. And they get their computers taken away from them. And then it's like they're feeling a little bit dumped. But if they know that they have somebody from the outside who's rooting for them, who's maybe giving them a call or two, who's maybe paying attention, and whom we can say, okay, well, when you're done here, you know, yeah, we have this connection. We can help you filter back into the system with the help of those who brought you in or those who are willing to come and be a friend. So we need the help of the local Israeli believing community in our little corner of the world down in Arad. And that's what we need. Prayer is the biggest and best because it works. And communication is good. Friendship. Help us to filter these women a little bit. I got a phone call from a very nice person who's working in the streets, and they said, "Here, I want you to talk to this person on the phone, and she's, you know, she said she'd like to change your life. She's a drug addict. She's a prostitute." She said, "Okay, well, that's fine." I said, "Well, I got her on the phone." I said, "So you want to change your life? You want to do? Well, no, not really." It's like, okay. Okay, maybe. And then the person came back on the phone, and I said, "Well, how long have you known this person?" "Well, I just met her, you know, half an hour ago." I was like, maybe get to know them a little bit, and that will be helpful. We never know when somebody is just going to come along and say, "Hey, I want to change my life. Help me out. Give me a phone number." Okay, we can do that. But the person needs to be mentored a little bit. And I can't do that. I can't do that from the phone, and I can't do that from a rod. So I need help. I need help from those of us who are out in the community and in the big cities. That's not me. But you guys are here in the big cities, and you guys come across people that can really use help. A lot of people. A lot of people can use help, but to get it narrowed down to the right person, the right woman who's able to come and be with us and to stick it out and to actually change their lives, to give their lives over to the Lord and to change inside, which is no easy feat. And it's been very hard. And even those, we've had a couple of ladies who have come and they've been yes, yes people. Oh, yes, yes. Oh, that's good. Oh, I know. I know the scriptures. Yes, I've been taught this already. But their hearts didn't change. And one woman who was with us for almost 5 months, she was with us for 5 months. Yes, yes, yes. I'm doing much better now. I'm feeling better. I need to go back. I need to go back to the family. Within the week, she was in the hospital again. And it's disheartening and hard. So even when they go back out, even if they go back out before their time, they still need shepherding. And that's probably the most important time when they do need the shepherding is when they go back out, whether they go back out early or late or what. They're frail, and they need help. And We need your help. We can't do it by ourselves. God can, and He can bring people along. But we've even learned that, you know, oh yes, this rule is good. Oh yes, this rule didn't work. Okay, Lord, what rules do you want in here? Come on down. Show us. Tell us. And what we found out mostly over this past year is there's no way we can do it by ourselves. We have three regular staff people that are permanent. And we have a rollover of volunteers, which is really good and really great. But, you know, they're coming, and they're coming for anywhere from 3 weeks to 3 months because they're volunteers from outside the country, and they come on working visa, or they come on tourist visas. And they're there for a short time, but they all speak English because they had to in order to communicate with me. But they don't speak Russian, and they don't speak Hebrew, and they don't speak Arabic. So one of our biggest prayer needs is that we need another full-time person who speaks Hebrew English, who can read and write in Hebrew, and help us with our evening shift. That's where we put our volunteers because that's the easy shift. In the morning we have all the structure, in the evenings it's less structured. But we really, really need another Hebrew-speaking Israeli citizen person who doesn't have to make any visa runs. Because one of the things that we have seen is that the inconsistency with all these different volunteers coming, which have been great, and they've been great, most of them. Some of our volunteers have needed more help than our girls, but it's okay. We live in Israel, and everybody comes for a visit. But we could really use another full-time volunteer person because we're not a paid organization yet. Working on that. So it'd have to be truly from the heart that somebody comes to participate with us full time. And of course, you can always pray for us finances. It's great and wonderful if you have a wonderful ideas and things, but until the rent gets paid and the electricity gets paid, you know, you just don't have much going on. For 3 years, we had it all, it was getting together and everything, but we just didn't have a place. And we didn't have enough money for a place. And finally, a chunk of money came in and it's like, okay, but this still isn't enough. But you know what? It's enough, we can get started. So we got started, and the Lord has kept it going, and the Lord has rolled it over. And but prayer is what keeps that going too. And so this is what we're doing down in the desert of Arad, and you're all welcome to come and visit anytime. We can have tea and cookies.
And that's what we're doing. So I'd appreciate your prayers.